from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Ana Teresa Fernandez joins us for this Forum segment. Born in Tampico, Mexico, she now lives in San Francisco and is known as a painter and performance artist who has also worked on community-based projects, sculpture, videos, and photography. And for 14 years, she was a competitive swimmer and has taught art at the university level and to indigent youth in New Mexico, Haiti, and South Africa. Known for work which focuses on political and social issues, often involving gender, race, class, and personal and cultural identity, her solo exhibition, Foreign Bodies, is presently at the Wendy Norris Gallery in San Francisco, and she joins us for this Foreign segment. Welcome.
Thank you.
Glad to have you here. Well, as I was reading about you, I learned about social sculpture. That is sculpture which has, well, social intent behind it. I learned that you actually went in one of your cocktail dresses and painted the Mexican border wall blue. And, I mean, these are extraordinary in themselves, but a lot of your work has really been identified with, and let's talk about that, with social and political issues, particularly related to the United States and Mexico, but women's bodies, especially.
Yes. Yes.
That's where you've kind of made your name, your signature work, yeah?
Well, I, as you said, I was born and raised in Tampico, Tamaulipas, in Mexico, and then I moved to the States when I was 10. So there was, I got a pretty amazing perspective and was able to relate to people on both sides of the border, as well as speak different languages. And I started observing the differences and the contrast and the similarities. And I grew up with 15 women in my family, cousins and sisters. And the culture around us, it was heavily machista in Mexico. But when I moved to the States, I noticed that the differences, I mean, there wasn't that much equality as well. There were more opportunities, but still there was a lot of disparity. And so that was, I think a lot of the work has always been, I get these hits in my gut in which I react to, and that has always been the fuel of my work.
The work has also been fueled by many other things, but it's tied in with documentation. I mean, it's performance-based painting, a lot of your work. Directly comes from your performative work.
It is. I was heavily influenced and inspired by the women in my family, my mother, my aunts, and how unseen they were. And so for me, I would get these very, very, very clear images of how I wanted them to be seen. And I found that through painting this picture of how I wanted to see them and people witness them, because there was so much expectation of just housework. And most of the women in my family were housewives, and that big disparity of education existed heavily in Mexico. And so I wanted to have the importance of that labor be seen in a different way. So, and I tend to smell things a lot. I tend to feel things and by temperature. And so I wanted to create these scenes in which you could hear the stilettos on the floor while cleaning a toilet.
Stilettos made out of ice?
Well, that was another one.
I did see those ice-made stilettos, which, but you're talking about the labor that women do. There's Pressing Mothers is a very striking work of yours where you have women, there's a lot of sexuality, but a lot of it's domestic labor and women lying on emery board and ironing boards,
yeah.
With brooms. Sort of a conjunction between the labor and the body. Yeah.
Well, because I think it is, I think until very long, until recently, the little box which you could check off in a lot of governmental surveys didn't include housewife or housework, or it wasn't seen as a labor. And I think in Mexico, it's still not regarded as a labor. Even though you're sculpting children, you're maintaining a house, you're maintaining a psychological space, and which requires a lot of sculpting and time and emotional input. And I think, so for me, Pressing Matters was a way for me to confront, like, these women stuck in these homes. I started looking at the objects as, you know, physical partners, mental partners, psychological partners, because they do spend so much time there unseen. And so it is their bodies relating to that space in a different way.
Talking with artist Ana Teresa Fernandez about her work, and it's a wide range of work. I mean, you know, I'm trying to get my head around all the work as much as I could, because you've done so much in video and photography as well as in performance. I was also interested in reading about some of the influences on you. Obviously, Latin writers, and you mentioned in one article or interview,
Heavily, yes.
Magical realism and the poets and writers like Octavio Paz. I couldn't help thinking, especially with all these bicultural borderlands theme. Do you know Gloria Anzaldúa? Do you know her?
No, I don't.
She's one of those writers who comes to all this intersection like you do. I mean, you came through Tijuana to San Diego, right?
Yes, I did.
I mean, in terms of your background. But there's also that sense of using stereotypes in your work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're not afraid of doing that, are you?
Well, I think like a lot of I was around my parents had a lot of surrealism posters.
So does Wendy Norris have a lot of surrealism?
Yes, yeah.
The gallery you're at is known for its surrealism. Sorry.
So our house was always had all these posters around us, and so it was just and then they had magic realist books as well that my father and my mother kept putting in my hand, and I was a bit of a bookworm when I was much younger before the internet age. And so I was constantly being bathed by this and seeing the world and seeing language. I thought I was going to be a linguist or study languages before I kind of came across art, and it chose me a little bit more than I did it. So I think the way I observe the world is very much as one accumulates different languages, which is kind of, it's erasing what it is that you already know and looking at it in a very new way, in a different light. And so you're constantly relearning things. But I think what you said about stereotypes, I think for me, I take these objects or these images in which are already known to be in a certain way, in a certain light, and I like to shift the context of it so people are able to do that, to see it in a new way, like shift perspective.
Like the cocktail dresses.
Exactly. You know, while painting the border sky blue. You know, I had people come up to me that have lived in front of that fence, in front of the Tijuana, which is in Mexico, Mexico-American border fence. They lived by it. Every day they see it, they witness it. And there's always protests and people putting up posters. But when I did that performance in which I was in distress and I painted it blue, she came up to me and she said, "What on earth were you doing?" And I said, "You know, I'm painting it out. I'm erasing it." And she said, "I've never actually had paid attention to it. And I've lived by it my entire life. And for the first time I saw it. And by you removing it, I was able to see it." And there was this other runner that was running along the beach and came up to me. And he's like, "I get it. I totally get it." He was having this epiphany, you know, who just happened to be running from really far away towards us to touch the fence.
This is what you want, people to see through fresh eyes. I mean, it's what you're able to do. I mean, especially with some of the things I can't get that image out of my head of you in this jungle in Mexico on a white horse in a dress, a cocktail dress, of course, with the stilettos in a sinkhole. And here's what I was talking about in the last segment with Judith Belzer about the whole sense of history and being steeped in history. That sinkhole was where virgins were sacrificed
yes.
to the gods. So you were aware of the history and you were bringing it out into a different vision. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when I do performances, I choose very specifically. I mean, they're called site-specific performances. But I'm very attracted or I'm heavily reacting to a space. And I had gone to visit with my family those sinkholes probably about 6 or 7 years ago or even more, probably about 10 years ago now. And when I heard that information, I mean, when you have these guides telling you, talking about these beautiful sites and then he said, "Oh, yeah, and they used to, thousands of bodies were found of virgins that were offered to the gods." And I just remember my stomach curling inside of me and just thinking of what an enormously beautiful sight and what an enormous tragedy along with it. And I thought, like, these girls never came of age. They were never, they weren't able to grow up and become people because they became currency to the gods, to these people, to these entities. You know, they were currency. Their skin was currency because they had not been touched.
Their flesh.
You know, yeah, their flesh was a type of currency. And so I started looking at my surroundings, which the political weather right now is that the sex trade with the drug cartels is so immense at the moment. And the same thing is happening. It's a different type of lord. It's a different type of god, which is the drug lords. You know, the Zetas and the Cartel del Golfo, and they're using sex trade along the border They're picking up all these people, these girls, these young girls that are trying to permeate the border and come across and become better, attain better lives, and they're selling their skin. And so I took the narrative of Francis Ford Coppola's film, which is The Black Stallion, and that moment in which Alex, which is all a metaphor about Alexander the Great and his first conquest being this black horse. And so Alex, the little boy in The Black Stallion, he first is able to ride the black stallion at the beach where he's stranded. And he does so by, you know, attaining buoyancy by taking the horse into the ocean. And that's where he's able to finally attempt to ride this white stallion. And there's this whole struggle that happens. So I've always identified with that. I wanted to be that little, I wanted to be Alex. I wanted to be that coming of age person by riding this wild stallion. And so I took these different metaphors. I went back to the sinkhole and I took the metaphor of Alexander the Great and Alex with the wild stallion. And I wanted to change the history of that site. And so I myself placed, you know, I got there and with a horse handler that I rented a horse, and he was just looking at me like, what on earth are you doing? Why are you putting stilettos on? Why are you taking the horse into the cenote? But as they saw what I was trying to do, which was ride this stallion, this white stallion in the water, they themselves became invested into it. And they're like, oh no, you know, if we ride him through here and if we film it this way, I think once they see what it is that your vision is attempting to do, they become involved and invested. It
becomes participatory art.
Exactly. So all of a sudden, I had these horse handlers helping me, you know, create this video performance with this horse while I was wearing the stilettos and the dress and everything.
So much of this certainly resonates politically. And I know there's another painting of yours called Ablution, a series of paintings, actually, which has a body submerged from different sites. And you were really trying to think of water and its manifold symbolism. I know, you know, cleansing, purifying, but also the idea of the wetback, you know.
Exactly.
To communicate these political ideas in your paintings, in the work you do, the performative work you do and so forth. I was struck by something you said, again, in an interview where you said, painting can be, politics can be subtle and poetic too, because we think of politics as often didactic and banging us over the head and so forth, but you're looking for more of that changing of vision and subtlety.
Yeah, I think art can paint a different picture. And there's this beautiful comment by Angela Glover Blackwell, and she does public health.
Someone I admire enormously.
Oh,
she's been on the show a couple
times. Wonderful. And she was at my sister's public health graduation at UC Berkeley, and she said, you know, there's this term, collateral benefits. And I think that art has the power to do that emotionally, psychologically, for the soul. I think that's what I always attempt and strive to do. And for me, I try and create this sense of agency in people by doing these performances in which they, you know, and when I do community work as well, it's create like that they are agents of change. You know, they have people have agency. And by doing these performances, it's, you know, these sites are public. And so I go in there and I do these performances in which I allow myself to do them. And they're most often Sisyphean tasks. And by doing these, you know, like mopping the beach, the border beach with my hair, it's people pay attention and like, what is she doing? You know,
the large scale San Francisco Public Art Project, I think listeners may know 5W, which was awarded Best of the Bay by 7x7, the magazine back in 2013. And if you've just joined us, we're talking with Ana Teresa Fernandez. You were, in fact, influenced enormously, as I understand it, by Wayne Thiebaud. You just looked at his paintings, stared at his paintings.
Yes, I'm a tremendously huge fan of his. I geek out every time I see his paint, the way he uses paint, the colors. I think he's an amazing colorist, and I've learned so much just by, you know, observing a ton of his books, as well as going to the De Young and seeing the paintings that they have there in the collection of theirs.
Let me open the phone lines. Opportunity for you again to talk with an artist who's made an impact here in the Bay Area and beyond, who's here with us in studio, Ana Teresa Fernandez. Her work being shown now at the Wendy Norris Gallery in San Francisco, and an opportunity for you to speak directly with the artist. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. If you have any responses to her work, if you know it, or if you have any questions for her, a lot of aspiring artists who like to talk to other artists and find out perhaps some tricks of the craft and trade, and we do welcome your phone calls. Again, that's 866-733-6786. She works a lot with water as a central part of her work, black cocktail dresses, matching heels, and legs. Legs are very prominent in her work as well, but a lot of it's performative work and work which tries to provide agency and brings up the whole question about how much can art really endow you with or invigorate you with or perhaps even instill or inspire agency in you. Our email address is forum@kqed.org, and you can also join us a number of other ways. You can tweet us, our Twitter handle @KQEDForum, or go online, and our online address, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. I was mentioning Wayne Thiebold, also a big admirer of Richard Feynman. Now, where does that come into play, the famous physicist?
Well, I read his book, and like I said, I'm really fascinated with languages, and I think the way that Richard Feynman observed the world was very much at looking at the possibility, and I often talk about objects or things or places having thrust, having this potential that's unused. And I liked very much how he expressed himself, and to go back a little bit about the term wetback, you know, and also reading a lot of, you know, Octavio Paz's work and the Labyrinth of Solitude and the way that he used language and observed and how we talked with, you know, gender-based language, negative and positive connotation, how we build a history around language, whether it's positive or negative. And the term wetback for me was always...
Always a pejorative.
Water has always been used as a symbol of cleanliness, of beauty, of fertility. And all of a sudden, Latinos get stuck with a negative connotation of water. Like, how did we manage to do that? You know, and so for me, it was all about recreating a notion of quote unquote a wetback, a woman staying afloat, and not only doing that, she was powerful swimming with drag, you know, like with the drag of femininity, you know, just to be able to prove that, you know, we can sustain ourselves. And wetback is just I just find completely disgusting.
Well, you've taken on some pretty formidable topics along those lines. I'm thinking also about some of these broken glass sculptures that you did, the Milagros, really trying to evoke femicide in Juarez and children who were left as orphans in places like Bangladesh and Vietnam. Uh-huh. I mean, uh-huh. To bring that into your art, very challenging and formidable indeed.
Well, I mean, like having grown up in Mexico where there is a language, vernacular language of ingenuity, ingeniousness, in which we use objects, discarded objects, and we repurpose them. There's a whole community in Tijuana that's basically the homes are built out of garage doors. And I think that's beautiful. I mean, for your entire home to be a door.
Do you also see truckers with cardboard? This is coming to mind.
Yeah, a project with them. And, you know, and I wanted to, I saw those, what I titled Troca Troca, which is the recycling. A lot of Latino and Asian of the community uses, they rebuild, refurbish these trucks. They put these big, large walls, and you see them like lumbering down the street with a Tower of Pisa of cardboard in the back. And I always saw them as sculptures, of mobile sculptures, because they were so beautifully crafted, and they tie this string underneath in which they place the cardboard above, so when they take it to the redemption center, they just tie the string on the floor, and so they move the card forward, and this wave of cardboard just unloads in 5 seconds, and it's just genius. And so there's all these ways in which I think third world countries view objects and the possibility, the not just of what the object's first purpose was, but like what many purposes it can have. I think that gets translated into how I like creating work and what I get inspired by. And so those girls that were covered in broken glass like scales, I saw, you know, my community, both in Mexico and in my travels abroad in South Africa and Haiti, people putting broken glass along the edge of fences as the most basic way of safety, you know, to protect their home. So I wanted to create this shell-like exterior of these girls that I find so vulnerable now and protect them. But on the other hand, glass is so beautiful. It glows, and with light, it reflects. And so there's this temptation to want to pet them and hold them and protect them, but you can't because obviously, you know, they're broken shards and you'll get cut.
Like I said, compelling stuff. You work so much with water and water as symbolism, as we said earlier on. And I had mentioned in the introduction, you were a competitive swimmer, but you're also a surfer too?
Yeah.
You still surf?
Yeah. I tell people that art, you know, it stopped me from having a mediocre life, but surfing saved me from drowning in the art world.
You know, by any chance, a poet by the name of Tom Gunn, who lived here in San Francisco, wrote a poem called From the Wave, which is really about surfing. And it's quite compelling.
Do you know it by heart?
No. but it's well worth reading and recommend.
I mean,
anybody who loves surfing or feels driven to surf for whatever reason, I think would benefit by that poem. He was a poet who was from England originally and settled here in San Francisco, became kind of part of a lot of the San Francisco sort of post-beat, neo-beat movement it was. And he was also gay, and he wrote some really wonderful things during the AIDS plague, I mean, when it was at its worst, because he lost so many friends then and so forth. Talk about the politics of inner sectionality, which is something you've defined.
Well, no, I personally didn't define that.
It's been labeled.
It's an art term. So intersectionality, and it's the crossing of politics and gender politics, social politics. It's a convergence.
When
of
I said you
ideas.
Define, I mean you stand for this in many people's minds. Yeah. Okay, how does it work for you?
Well, you know, I take these different languages in which I created, and one, for example, one way is in which I mix painting with performance. Most performance history has been largely based in photography and video. And I actually gotten a little bit of slack over using painting as a format, you know, where people say, well, it's not documentation of a performance. And I said, well, isn't editing, you know, when you edit a video, you add sound. What I'm doing is I'm taking a biographical image that someone took of me, and I'm spending time while I paint it, and I'm editing by the temperatures that I felt and the experience and the taste in my mouth of the sand and the what it felt to stand between two large iron posts in between two countries. And, you know, I think, you know, when I'm composing all those layers, which are about 50 layers of paint, for me, that's my editing process of the performance, and I'm able to dictate all my experiences in how I choose the colors and the temperature and the feel and the textures of the sand and what it feels like for the heel to sink into the sand and, you know, the taste of salt in your mouth and all of that.
Well, you are a sensual artist, to put it mildly, and you teach art.
I do.
And then some of you, how do you teach art? I mean, teach it in a conceptual way mainly?
I'm always very politically and socially driven. And so I like to have a conceptual discourse when I'm teaching at a university level. But I myself, because I never got a chance to have art in my education, I have touched a paintbrush for the first time when I was 20, which I think was, I mean, it's,
just
I think
what
it's
you've been
terrible.
Missing all those years. Is this why you like
I
to teach kids?
I have FOMO, fear of missing out.
This is why you teach kids, yeah.
This is exactly why I teach kids and exactly why I teach underprivileged immigrant youth in the Bay Area, because I think it's so – if they can have access to this way of living and thinking and creating, the earlier the better. And I think art in that way of learning – I was – very mediocre student of because of right and wrong answers. I had a terrible sense of memory and just of just holding in data. And I learned I can remember people's scents. I can remember what their handshake feels. But if you ask me to give you a telephone number and, you know, back I can't. Even the first three numbers, I can't remember it. So for me, it's such an important thing to have provide this access of information in a way of learning and taking in information to such a young sector that it's like, what? That's what really I thrive in.
Well, here's a question from a listener. Kathleen writes online, what recommendations does Anna have for an emerging artist who has been selling in the Bay Area for 3 years and would like to eventually get into a gallery?
Well, it's, you know, I think it's such a strange dance. I started going to Gallery Wendy Norris because I thought their group of artists was fabulous and smart and dynamic. And so I started attending their openings and just tried to see if we had someone in that could connect us, you know, a bit of a messenger, because it's not very well seen to approach the gallerist yourself. So you always look for connections in between someone that can make a more of a formal introduction. But you have to be very well versed of what it is that gallery wants, and you need to know what you want. It's like dating, in a sense.
It's called networking.
Yes.
So the exhibit, Foreign Bodies, will be, again, at the Wendy Norris Gallery, or Gallery Wendy Norris, through May 31st. And it can be extended at all, possibly?
No, it was up for 2 months. That's
and that's
already...
it. So what are you working on now?
Well, I have, I'm going to be working on a mural piece in Baja California that I'm going to go down there in a couple of weeks, as well as creating a site-specific public piece for a lobby in a space here in San Francisco. You know, there's a line of things that I definitely want to, and there's always ideas brewing in my head, and some of them take a shorter amount of time, some of them take a little bit longer time, so...
Well, your work's impressive. And,
thank you.
And in fact, I think you describe it as blatantly figurative, which is a good description of any I've heard. So good to have you with us. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Mucho gusto conocerle.
Igualmente, gracias.
And we are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. Want to again remind you that you can listen to my 2002 interview with celebrated poet and activist Maya Angelou, who died today at the age of 86. Just visit our website, kqed.org/forum, and you can always continue this discussion at that same website, or let us know what you think about what you hear on Forum or would like to hear by emailing us, forum@kqed.org. And I want to remind you who is behind the scenes here. Always important to take note of. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Larberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Senior editor is Dan Zoll. And for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.